This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Listener, have you ever owned a dog that suffered from health issues? I have. Coping with this traumatic experience has led to me being more proactive when caring for my furry friends. That's where actress Katherine Heigl comes in. She's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dog joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health. And that's their food. What she discovered is that the way many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that could be wrecking our dog's health. And this is true even for many of the premium brands. She has found that by just adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. In fact, she made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do this same thing to see incredible changes in their dog's health. Listener, I have watched this video, and honestly, it is 20 minutes well spent. The health of my animals means everything to me. This stuff has improved the coats and energy of mine, and they love it. Normally, they are picky with their food, but they really enjoy this stuff. It's time for you to get proactive. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/Obscura and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular priced order, with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/Obscura today.
Listener, this week we don't have a new episode for you, but I am uploading a Patreon-exclusive Black Label. I'm currently in recovery from a bad run-in with COVID and the flu. Don't worry, I should be back on my feet in no time. If you'd like to support the show while I recover, please consider supporting the Patreon. Now, let's get on with it. The maternal instinct of a mother is an all-encompassing level of emotion. To love, nurture, and protect their child is biologically embedded, a bond that could never be broken. That is how it should be. But life is a complex matrix of relationships, emotions, and decision-making, and the human psyche is a powerful fighting force. Of the violent crime committed in America each year, women account for just 14% of offenders. But when that violence is against their child, that statistic jumps to over 50%. Maternal filicide, the murder of a child by their mother, is a murky, understudied arena where those natural instincts are replaced with an entirely different kind of drive. A drive that takes away the very life they previously gave so lovingly. In almost every maternal filicide case, the child killed is under 5 years old. These children are beaten, drowned, strangled, and smothered under their mother's psychosis, extended abuse, or a simple desire to live a life free of the responsibility of childcare. Under the grim umbrella title of maternal filicide sits a subset of cases that stand alone. These are rare cases where the target of the mother's violence is their adolescent children, and their murder weapon is a firearm. The choice of a gun to carry out these acts allows the mother control. Quick method of almost certain death with no physical contact required. A gun provides ultimate power for the mother, and for her victims, it evokes the maximum terror. These children had been raised all their lives by gentle and loving mothers, making the sudden switch to ruthless homicide all the more unbelievable and utterly devastating. The brutal reality of these cases is the cold-blooded slaying of innocent young lives by the very person they feared the least. In society, while we live our lives, we fear violence and attack from outside. Those around us that we don't know, those that are not a part of our world, our families are where we feel safe. Often they are who we feel most accepted by, and where we can truly be ourselves. Immediate family is who we trust. But sometimes the greatest danger actually comes from within. At 5 p.m. on June 24, 2016, two 911 calls came into the Fort Bend County's dispatch office in Texas. They were calls that overlapped each other, answered by different dispatchers, but the audible screams and desperate pleas were unmistakably from the same incident. At the other end of the phone lines, in the city of Katy in Houston, 42-year-old Christy Sheets had called a family meeting in her home. Her husband, 45-year-old Jason Sheets, and two daughters, 17-year-old Madison and 22-year-old Taylor, who still lived at home, gathered with Christy in the living room. Once her family was in front of her, Christy Sheets reached behind a cushion on the sofa. She pulled out a .38 caliber revolver. She raised the barrel of her gun to point directly at her two daughters. In a sudden turn of immense rising fear and foreboding, her family pleaded with her to put the gun away. Their screams fell on deaf ears. Christy Sheets had decided on her course of action. Now she was determined to carry those actions out. The Sheets' home was on a quiet suburban street that burst into life that afternoon as Jason and his daughters fled outside. The Sheets' neighbor, who lived opposite, was alerted by gunfire. Looking out his window, he was unable to believe what he was seeing. Terrified and worried for his own family, he dialed 911 and told the dispatcher what he was witnessing outside his own home.
Wait.
Do you please fire EMS?
Yes, we need an ambulance right away. Two people believe they're shot.
Okay, stay on the line. Okay, you think they got shot, you say?
Yes.
Okay. All right, stay on the line.
There's a lady with a gun.
There's a lady with a gun? Where?
Yes. It's coming out of the house right now.
Okay.
People shot outside.
Okay.
People shot outside.
Okay. Where is the lady with the gun?
Coming out of, it's on the street right now.
Is she still shooting?
No, it's not shooting, but it's the gun in her hand. I ran to the back of my house.
Okay. Do you know who the lady is?
They're my neighbors.
Okay. And the people that she shot, do you know them?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
Abre la puerta,
are you with the patients right now?
No, because the lady
Okay.
The gun came out.
Wearing?
I had to run.
Describe her for me. What is she wearing? What is she wearing?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I had to run to the back.
Okay, I understand. What is she? Can you describe her for me? What is she? White, black, Hispanic, or Asian?
She's a Caucasian.
Okay.
Go back.
Okay. What is she wearing?
She's wearing a dress.
What color dress?
Let me try to pick to the window. Sorry.
Okay. Okay. No problem. Don't put yourself in danger though. But do you remember what color her dress was?
She's wearing a purple dress.
Purple dress.
Yes.
Okay.
She's wearing a purple dress. She's on the.
Is it long, short? What is she? Where are the patients?
They're in the street. They're in the middle of the street.
Okay.
I was London.
It's two people laying in the street?
Two ladies laying in the street.
Two females? Okay.
Yeah, two females. And there's a guy trying to help them. But the lady is on the top of one of them with a gun on her hand.
Okay, but the suspect is on top of one of the females on the street?
Yeah, she's on the street, just standing up.
She's standing over at one of the patients with the gun?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And it looks like both of them are alive. Both of the child person,
okay.
Related, they're both alive. But
okay.
Christy Sheets had chased her family out onto the streets, determined to finish what she had started. Madison had fallen to the ground with a fatal gunshot wound. She died lying on the road, not understanding what was happening at the hands of her mother. Taylor Sheets had managed to run further after already being shot once. When she fell to the ground, her mother dropped down next to her. With the gun still in her hand, she continued to fire.
You know, she tried to shoot again. She's trying to shoot again on the top of her, but
okay.
Apparently she don't have any more bullets.
Okay, yeah, I do too, sir. Just stay on the line. And let me know what you see. But
okay.
She's
going inside the house now. Hopefully she's not getting any more bullets because she's looks like she's going to look for more bullets.
Okay. All right, stay on the line.
And there's a... I don't know where the guy went, but apparently he's yelling at her, and
okay.
They're talking back and forth.
Describe the guy.
The guy is also, they're all Caucasians.
Okay. Okay, and so the two females and the male is Caucasian.
Yes, all four of them.
Okay. And is the male
coming out?
Also?
She's coming back again. She's coming back again with apparently she has bullets now on her.
Okay, stay on the line.
Oh, she shot her again.
She shot her again?
Yes, from the back. She's trying to run.
She shot the female again. That was.
Yes, it was laying down on the floor.
Okay.
She shot her from the back.
Okay, stay on the line.
She's shooting again. They're running down the street. Adrián, ¿dónde estás? No, bájate, Adrián. Porque es más arriba, más fácil que se vaya una bule. ¿Por qué te fuiste para allá? Vente
okay.
Para acá.
Sir, what do you
yes,
see? What is she doing now?
Quédate aquí, Adrián. Lay down on the floor.
Okay, sir.
Lay down on the floor, Adrián.
Yeah, make sure your family is secure. Don't let
yes.
Anyone see you looking out the window, okay? Can anyone see you? Okay.
I can hear her. I don't see them anymore, but there's a bullet. I can hear bullets. And she's laying down on the floor now.
The female that was shooting is laying down?
Yes.
Did she shoot herself?
I don't know. I just see her down on the floor now, but I don't know what happened because I had to run to bring
okay.
My son to safety.
Okay.
¿Con qué estás hablando, ya?
Okay. Did she shoot herself?
Apparently she did.
You think she shot herself?
Apparently she shot herself, yes.
Okay. Then is she moving?
I don't see. She's moving, yes.
Okay.
You know, it doesn't look like she's moving anymore.
Okay. Okay, okay, sir. I'm so sorry you're saying this, okay, but just stay on the line.
Good. Again.
Okay. Stay on the line, sir.
Yes.
Okay. What do you see now? Are the two are the two females still laying in the street?
I can't see them. I have to take my son to safety. Hold on a second, please.
Okay. No problem. If you're if you have to take your family to safety, then don't worry about going back to the window.
Okay. Nosotros estamos bien.
Okay, sir, do you happen to know the names of these people? Do you know your neighbors?
No, I don't know them by names or anything.
Okay.
Okay, preciosa. Joder, preciosa. Pero no te vayas a parar ya nunca, okay? Cuando vaya así, algo así. I'm sorry. I had to call my son because he's crying too.
I'm so sorry you had to see that, sir. I'm so sorry you had to see that. Okay. They're on the way. Just let me know what you see. If you see anything change, let me know. We have multiple deputies on the way, okay?
Okay. She's laying down on the floor
is
still.
Is she still not moving?
She's still not moving.
Okay.
When the revolver chamber had been emptied, Christy returned inside her home, reloaded her gun, and came back to chase her eldest daughter down the street and shoot her in the back. In those few minutes of deadly chaos, Jason Sheets ran desperately from one daughter to the other, unable to comprehend what was happening or be able to stop it. Christy was not aiming her gun at him. He ran down to the end of the cul-de-sac to try and summon help. As the shooting stopped, Christy Sheets had not taken her own life. With the arrival of law enforcement, a full-shear police officer in attendance to support the Fort Bend County Sheriff's Office at the scene had ordered her to put down her weapon. She had refused, but the police officer fired one shot, striking Christy Sheets and causing her to fall to the ground. The multiple shooting was over. Madison and Christy lay dead in the street. Taylor Sheets, gravely wounded but clinging on to life, lay a few meters away from her mother and sister. She held on long enough for the emergency paramedics to reach her. She was rushed to the Texas Medical Center, but died soon after arrival. Unable to survive the internal damage of the three gunshot wounds, Jason Sheets stood in a state of deep shock. Christy and Jason had been married for over 20 years. They had grown up just 15 minutes away from each other in Alabama, their young adult lives combining to where they went into adulthood together. Moving to Katy, getting married, and having their children. But in recent years, their marriage was struggling. Life began to fall apart. The death of her grandfather in 2012, followed just months later by the death of her mother, set off a spiral of despair, depression, and self-criticism in Christy. Since 2012, Christy had attempted suicide three times. She had spent multiple periods in psychiatric units, with Fort Bend County responding to her residence 14 times across 4 years for various incidents. Her mind could not be described as stable. The couple had separated numerous times in those years, only recently getting back together after the most recent separation. On that morning, however, her husband told Christy of his intention to divorce. He had reached the decision their relationship was now at a point where it should end permanently. Christy also got in an argument with her eldest daughter, Taylor, on that day. She wanted to ground Taylor, stop her leaving the house and seeing her fiancé, who she was due to marry in 2 weeks. It was a verbal argument, but a heated one, and one where Jason took the side of his daughter. June 24th, 2016, was also Jason Sheets' 45th birthday. He had told his wife this would be the last birthday she would ruin. Christy Sheets decided otherwise. She gunned down her two daughters in front of her husband's eyes, purposefully leaving him uninjured. She forced him to watch the massacre of their children. Her objective was to inflict a lifetime of unimaginable pain. For every birthday for the rest of his life, he will never escape the memories of what happened that day. Revenge, he told the police, was his wife's motive. Madison and Taylor Sheets were young women with plans and dreams for their future. Taylor was engaged to be married and planning on moving out of the family home. On July 4th, 2016, she should have walked down the aisle in her carefully picked out dress, and married her boyfriend, Juan Lugo, of 4 years. Instead, she was shot, chased, and shot twice again by her mother just 2 weeks before her wedding. Madison and Taylor were laid to rest in Decatur, Alabama, on July 2, 2016. We don't know if Christy Sheets intended to take her own life that day, or willfully kept a hold of her weapon to push law enforcement to fire the fatal shot. Murder-suicide is the most likely end in these cases. Mothers follow the sad trend of murdering their children, and then swiftly taking their own lives. Their objectives achieved. Found by family members or concerned friends, their bodies do not reveal the answers as to why. The pain that floods surviving family members scars them for the remainder of their lives. Most notably, the children's fathers. In 2014, almost 1,000 miles away from the Sheets' home city, 51-year-old Richard Berman was a successful luxury home realtor in West Palm Beach in Florida. When he woke on Monday, January 13, 2014, he began to prepare for a workday like any other. Recently divorced from his wife, and now no longer living in the family home, he was still finding his feet. When he checked his emails that morning, one jumped out at him. Sent from his ex-wife, he read the words over and over again. Panic, disbelief, and terror began to build within him. As he jumped in his car and drove to his former marital home, he dialed 911.
911, where's your emergency? Answer the phone. Yes, sir. Give us the address.
I'm just about getting there, but it's kind of concerning me. My ex-wife said that she was going to harm the kids and that I should get over there ASAP.
Okay, how do you spell the name of the street?
The house, but to be honest with you, I'm afraid to go in.
Okay, how many kids are in the house?
My two children and my ex-wife, but I don't know if they're there. I mean, but the car's in the driveway.
Are they kids also?
Yeah. We just recently got divorced.
Was it a text or a...
Well, she sent me an email that she did the best thing for our family, and then she sent her cousin a text that she was going to kill the kids and herself. And she's up in Port St. Lucie, and she's freaking out, and she called me. And now I'm in front of the house, and then I should get here ASAP.
All right, just to let you know, I have the call in already, okay?
Okay, I'm here.
All right, just stay on the line, though, with me.
Yeah.
Richard and 48-year-old Jennifer Berman had divorced in December 2013, just 1 month previously. Their marriage crumbling, they had agreed on joint custody of their two children, 16-year-old Alexander and 15-year-old Jacqueline. The children were wonderfully talented musicians, both attending the prestigious Dreyfus School of Arts in West Palm Beach, afforded due to their talents and father's successful income. Throughout the fall of 2013, the relationship between their parents had failed beyond repair. Jennifer Berman had filed for divorce the previous year, but the couple had remained living together in the West Palm home. It was a house previously owned by Jennifer's mother, but it was in foreclosure. Richard was an architect, general contractor, and licensed realtor, building his business and reputation in the area for years. He had built a home in the exclusive and historic El Cid area of West Palm Beach, selling it in 2010 for $1.2 million. But there was trouble waiting for him around the corner. Now known as the U.S. housing bubble, house prices rocked in early 2006, before falling year after year and hitting an all-time low by 2012. This bubble bursting affected Richard Berman's real estate company, turning the family income upside down and threatened the security they had built up. The current home had just been sold for $590,000. And Jennifer was renting the property to live in with the children till she moved into a new condo in February 2014. It was a move her or the couple's teenage children would not see. Jennifer Berman told her ex-husband in that email that she intended on murdering their children before taking her own life. She said she was doing the best for her family. Soon after Richard arrived at the house that morning, a neighbor, Kristen Plimmel, joined him outside, learning of the concern he had for his family. Kristen entered the house hoping to check on the family and reassure a nervous Richard, who was too frightened to enter, scared of what he might find.
Okay, is she home? Does she have a car there?
The car's in the driveway.
Does she have any weapons in that house?
Possibly.
What do you mean? Do you know of any weapons?
I remember there were.
What kind?
I'm sorry. I'm here with a neighbor.
Okay, but I need this information from you. What kind of weapons have you seen in the house?
Well, I remember she had her dad's old rifles.
And this is her house?
Yeah. Well, we just sold it recently, and she's been renting it. I'm in the driveway, and my neighbor just went in to look to see what's going on.
How are the kids?
I don't know what she said. 15 and 16. There's what?
What's going on?
Oh, jeez. I'm on with 911.
What's going on,
there's,
sir?
There's... it's up to you, Steve.
Sir. You... What's going on?
My neighbor went in, and there's blood up on the wall in near her bedroom.
Are the kids okay?
I don't know.
The 911 operator begged Richard not to go into the house. She had heard the neighbor's report of what she had seen. She knew no father should have to see what had most likely occurred within those walls. But Richard was unable to stop himself. He had to find out what happened.
Oh,
what's going on, sir?
Well, he's not moving, and he has...
Who's not moving?
There's blood on his ear.
This
my
your son.
Son?
Oh, Christ.
It's my son. Oh, this can't be real.
Yeah, somebody give me medics. We have police and paramedics on the way, sir.
Our car's there. I'm afraid to go upstairs.
Don't. You need to stay outside. The officers want you to stay outside, sir. We need your neighbor outside, too. We need everybody outside.
I can't talk right now.
I know. I need you to be calm, though. Did she say anything else? Did she see your daughter?
She said they're both upstairs in my... And she thinks they are.
She thinks they are what?
Upstairs in the bed. Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Do you ever scream your opinions into the abyss, hoping I can somehow hear you? Well, now I can. I'm going live on the Stereo app, where you can ask me your questions directly on the app. Stereo app has thousands of live social conversations, with a wide range of genres for every interest, including news, comedy, sports, and more. You choose whether to be a co-host, participate as a guest, or simply listen in on exclusive conversations. Join us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday over on the Stereo app. That's every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday over on the Stereo app. Download the Stereo app and follow us at stereo.com/obscuracrimepod. Link in the description. I love Stereo. I'm on the app talking all the time. Follow me and get notified every time I go live. Listener, this year, we're all looking forward to a fresh start. A great way to start fresh is with some self-care and fresh scents from Native. Native aluminum-free deodorant is a great addition to your 2021 routine. Native cares about what you put on your armpits. That's why their deodorant's ingredients list includes things you've actually heard of, like coconut oil and shea butter. Another plus, none of their products are tested on animals and almost everything is vegan. Switching to Native from an antiperspirant doesn't mean you'll have to worry about that midday BO either. Native will have you walking around smelling like coconut and vanilla, citrus and herbal musk, or maybe even lavender and rose. You can choose from over 10 scents, including their classics and rotating seasonals, so you're guaranteed to find one you love. Native deodorant has over 16,000 five-star reviews and has been featured in the Today Show for a reason. It works. Make the switch to Native today by going to nativedo.com/obscura or use promo code Obscura at checkout and get 20% off your first order. That's nativedo.com/obscura or use promo code Obscura at checkout for 20% off your first order. Alexander Berman was lying on the bed in the downstairs bedroom, curled in a fetal position and wearing just pajama bottoms. He had a gunshot wound to the back of his head, a fatal shot that gave him no chance of survival. Upstairs, blood on the outside of the bedroom door indicated what lay behind. On the bed was Jacqueline Berman. Like her brother, she was in a fetal position, with a visible gunshot wound to the left side of her head. Next to her lay her mother, Jennifer Berman, her face no longer recognizable after she pointed the Winchester Model 94 rifle at her head and pulled the trigger. The gun lay still pointing towards her head, across her chest, and in between her legs. Jennifer Berman had shot both her teenage children before shooting herself. Downstairs on the kitchen counter, she left a suicide note. The full contents have never been published except for one line. She had written, "I am so sorry to those that are hurting because they loved us." Jennifer was struggling to cope with the breakdown of her marriage and the uncertain future she was facing. There were court documents filed in the previous months claiming her husband was not paying bills in the home or providing for their daughters. She had sold a number of her father's possessions in order to obtain the money she needed day to day. The couple had reached an argument on the finalization of their divorce that Richard would pay $600 a month in child support and maintain the children's health care plans. Jennifer was anxious about her future, worried about her income and trying to provide for her children on her own. The psychological stress she was under is the only motive anyone is able to suggest for her actions that day. Richard Berman, a father of two precious children, was left to try to deal with their senseless deaths.
I miss him like crazy. I mean, I do. That's the hard part.
If he seems stoic, it's because Berman moves through his days on autopilot. Last month, he drove frantically to his ex-wife's home to find his children shot to death by their mother, who then killed herself. He won't allow himself to think about the horror of finding his children.
Yeah, I block it. I have to just try not to think about it.
He distracts himself with friends, with anything, to stop his mind from going there, especially at night.
Just get up. Otherwise, you lay there thinking about things too much.
Berman tells me his ex-wife was stressed out about money and their divorce, but that she was a good mother, and he had no idea she would kill their children.
I don't want to try to understand that. It doesn't make any sense.
He won't say if he has regrets, if he feels anger or guilt for not recognizing his wife's symptoms.
I just can't. I want to think about the positive things going forward and not really reflect back on the stuff that happened in the past in a negative way. If that's okay.
Sometimes he talks to Jackie and Alex.
Now that they're there looking out for each other.
But here, getting through each quarter of an hour is an achievement.
It's hard.
Jennifer Berman pulled the trigger with her own hand to end her life. Christy Sheets died by the bullet of law enforcement. With the death of these mothers, the reasons for killing their children, why they felt the need to take their lives alongside their own, disappeared. There are some cases, however, where a mother kills her children and lives. Mothers who then find themselves facing the consequences of their extreme actions.
Why did you want to shoot her in the mouth?
Because it angers me so much.
Her mouth angers you?
Yeah.
What happened after that? How did she end up in her bed?
Oh, I carried her.
You carried her over there?
Yeah.
Okay. You didn't want to leave her up at the computer where she was at after that happened?
No.
No? You took her and put her in the bed? Did you cover her?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Next time, too.
Okay, what happened with Beau? How did that all happen?
Well, He's copying what Calix does.
Oh, so he's starting to act up and talk back too?
He's
talking. Okay.
Sassy.
Okay.
And so I hit her in the head, in the back of the head.
Where was he at when
in the car. I took him in the car. I was expecting to get him in the car.
Okay.
And he saw the gun.
Or did that happen to Beau first?
Beau first?
Beau was in the car with you?
Yeah.
Okay. And what, Beau was smarting off to you?
Yeah.
And then where did you shoot Beau?
Yeah.
With that .38?
In the side of the head.
Okay.
And then I did his mouth too.
Oh, you shot him twice in the head?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they're too sassy.
Okay.
So
then after that happened with Beau, is that when you went in and did that with Calix?
Mm-hmm.
Calix didn't hear the shot?
We were outside in the van.
Okay.
48-year-old Julie Scheneker's voice is heavy, and her words slurred as she tells police detectives how she killed her children the previous night. 16-year-old Calix and 13-year-old Beau had both been shot twice in the head by their mother inside their home in Tampa Palms, Florida. After taking the lives of her children, Julie had taken an overdose of medication intending to kill herself. An attempt at taking her own life and dying alongside her children, which failed.
Do you know where they're at right now? Tell me where.
Goes in the van on the right side.
Okay, and where is your daughter?
In the bedroom.
Where at?
In bed.
Do you know what kind of condition they're in?
They're a mess.
They're a mess? Yeah. Are they alive or dead?
I don't know.
What do you think?
I hope so.
You hope what?
I hope they're dead.
You hope they're dead?
Yeah. What do you think?
They're dead. Now, what happened that you weren't able... You said that this was going to be a suicide for you. What happened that you weren't able to do it?
I went outside to smoke.
Okay.
And I was going to do it.
Okay.
In bed.
Right.
But they were still gurgling and making noises.
Really? They were still making... You could hear them making noises?
Yeah.
Were they're just gurgling, though? They weren't calling out or anything?
I don't think so.
You just heard noises, though? What kind of noises?
Gunshot.
No?
It was loud.
What kind of noises were they making?
Shrinking. Getting cold.
They were getting cold?
Mm-hmm.
See, you were in there touching them and...
Apologizing to them.
What were you apologizing for?
My behavior.
Tell me what behavior.
I'm sure I brought my notebook. I wrote them all down.
You wrote it in a notebook?
Mm-hmm. A spiral notebook.
This is a case that was reported on widely. The outside world perplexed and horrified at Julie Scheneker's statements during her police interviews. Her own words that her children were mouthy and too sassy, and these seemingly being her motive for why she took their lives. On Friday, January 28, 2011, officers from the Tampa Police Department in Florida attended the home of Parker and Julie Scheneker's to carry out a welfare check. Parker Scheneker was in the United States Army and was away on deployment in Afghanistan. Julie's mother had received a rambling email from her daughter the night before, was concerned she now couldn't make contact with her. When officers arrived at the home, Julie was found lying on the back porch of the house, dazed, unsteady on her feet, and confused. She was wearing a white bathrobe spattered with blood. Dried blood stains were visible on her hands. Tampa police officers began to search the house for Calix and Beau. Calix Scheneker was found upstairs in her bedroom. She was lying on her bed with a blanket placed over her. Bo Scheneker was slumped in the passenger seat of the family's white Honda Odyssey SUV, parked in the garage. He, too, had a blanket over him. Both children suffered gunshot wounds to their heads and faces from a weapon fired at very close range. The Schenekers were a military family. Parker Scheneker had been in the Army for 27 years, rising to the rank of colonel. His military role meant frequent trips overseas, ranging from a few days to a few weeks at a time. Julie Scheneker had served 10 years as an Army intelligence officer. She was a Russian language linguist, interviewing and debriefing defectors from the Soviet Union. Julie had left the military in around 2001 to focus on raising their two children. After celebrating Julie's 50th birthday on January 13, 2011, the family prepared for Parker's latest trip overseas. Traveling to Afghanistan on January 19th, Parker left his children in Julie's care as he always did when he was away. His return date was set and written on the family calendar, February 1st. Like Christy Sheets, Julie Scheneker had a history of mental health issues. Julie had received diagnoses of bipolar disorder as early as 2001. She was regularly seeing a psychiatrist and being treated for depression, problems with substance abuse, alcohol, and for her bipolar disorder. Parker knew his wife was struggling and that there was increasing tension between his wife and his daughter. He had talked with them both, arranged counseling for his daughter. At the time of her death, he was applying to and visiting different boarding schools as options for Calix to attend. Giving Calix some more independence and space between mother and daughter would help their relationship move forward. In November 2010, Julie had been involved in a motor incident while under the influence of alcohol and prescription medication. She entered inpatient rehabilitation for 3 weeks, returned home in early December. She was listless and unmotivated upon her return. Her low energy level saw her spend long periods in bed. Parker Scheneker often asked his mother, Nancy, to come from her home in New Orleans, Louisiana, to stay at their home and help Julie while he was away for work. This trip was no different, but Julie assured him she was okay. "I got this," she told him. Although he knew his wife had problems, he never feared for his children's safety and could have no way of knowing what would happen just a few days after he left. Before and after murdering her children, Julie Scheneker had kept a journal, a simple spiral notepad, A4 in size with a blue cover where she scribbled down her plans. She wrote about her frustrations with her teenage daughter talking back to her, how her son was beginning to copy Calix, leaving Julie feeling disrespected and upset. There is no doubt Julie Scheneker suffered from mental illness, or that she was in a period of psychological distress and distorted thoughts at the time she carried out these murders. Yet among this haze, she had planned for killing her children. 3 days after Parker had deployed on assignment, Julie had driven to a lock and load store in Oldsmar, a 40-minute drive from her home, to purchase a firearm. She told the store clerk she wanted the weapon for protection from home invasions that were taking place in her area. She was calm, coherent, and entirely believable with nothing about her behavior that would raise any alarm. After waiting the 3 days for the background checks to complete, she went to pick up the firearm on January 27th. The very same day, Calix and Bo were shot and killed. Her journal entries were updated within hours of taking the lives of her children. The family calendar, hanging above a wine rack in the kitchen, had additions made. In the small square for February 1st, when her husband was due home, she had written that Bo was in the van and Calix was in her bed. A post-it note was left stuck to the bottom step of the stairwell inside the house. "Donate my body to science," it read. Julie also sent an email to her husband after she had murdered his children. In it, she wrote, "Get home soon. We are waiting for you." Julie Scheneker had every intention of taking her own life that night. She wanted her husband to come home, thinking everything was fine, to go through the front doors of his home, and one by one, find his two teenage children and his wife dead. A grand jury indicted Julie Scheneker on February 9, 2011, on two charges of first-degree murder. It took a further 3 years for her case to come to trial. When it did on April 28, 2014, Julie pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. Parker Scheneker divorced his wife in May 2011. At a conference talk in the years after their murders, he spoke about the devastation and tragedy of the loss of his children.
So when sitting at my desk in the country of Qatar after just coming back from a quick deployment to Afghanistan, when two uniformed service members were at my door, sitting in front of my desk, a colonel and an Air Force captain in battle dress uniforms, combat boots, dirt, sweat, I thought they were teammates there ready to talk about tomorrow's mission. But in that split second, before that colonel started talking, I put two and two together. And I thought, oh my God, something's happened to my mom in Louisiana. Well, I was wrong. So there I was, 8,000 miles away, having just been told that my children were dead at the hands of their mother. And me, the tough guy, the guy in combat uniform, could do nothing about it. But what I did do is I spent the next 17 hours flying back to Tampa, trying to piece together what this all meant, wondering how I was going to live life without my Calyx and my bow. I knew that the focus needed to be on Calyx and Bo, not on anybody else. This tragedy was unthinkable, unimaginable, and it was not supposed to happen. Not to me.
At Julie Scheneker's trial, a line of psychiatrists testified. Both experts for the defense and the prosecution all agreed Julie had a mental illness and was in psychological distress during the time of the murders. Where they differed was whether she knew right from wrong at the time she killed her children, the key component of a successful insanity defense. On the first day of prosecution evidence, the crime scene technician who photographed Julie's journal read aloud some entries from those pages.
I just am losing my mind. I did all of my duties, then went to buy a gun. I was planning on a Saturday massacre, but had to wait on the background investigate for 3 days. I'll go back to P/U, the Smith & Wesson 38, on Thursday. I was hoping it would be tonight. ... I can't stand it waiting for 5 days. Theirs! ! Calyx, she gets it first. Don't know whether I'll first turn on the light, in parentheses to blind, or just react to halves me in her bedroom. I'm nervous. Calyx was so shitty yesterday when she said, and in quotations, wear makeup and dress up tomorrow for the mandatory meeting. She called me pathetic on... and it has Sunday scratched out. Saturday, she called me an evil soul. In parentheses, the evil starts Thursday. In parentheses. I've offed Bo on the way to practice. He saw the gun and told me to put it back in the purse. He had a healthy fight. I accidentally shot the window. The shot him. One extra. Shot through the side of the head. Then we got home, a shot to his mouth. I don't know what that word, next word is. Because he became so mouthy, just like Calyx. Drove the van into the garage, in parentheses, telling everyone we're going to NYC, close parentheses. They'll wonder where the van is. Off the bow in the van, going to practice. Dash, thought he'd be tying his shoes, but he caught me with the gun. Quotations, said he'd hit me if I didn't put it in my purse. He was yelling at me. First shot hit the windshield. Second shot was the side of the head. Next shot was to the mouth, his mouthy mouth. I would like to overdose and not use the gun. I've seen how much destruction it causes, and I probably won't get two shots off.
This combined evidence, while highlighting the fragile, confused, and distorted frame of mind Julie Scheneker was in, also spoke to planning, premeditation, and the murders in some part being an act of revenge on her husband. The jury struggled to reconcile these various behaviors and actions with a state of mind not fully aware of what she was doing and not understanding right from wrong. Julie Scheneker was found guilty of two counts of first-degree murder after the prosecution dropped their quest for the death penalty due to her history of mental illness. She was sentenced on May 15, 2014, to two life sentences to run concurrently without the possibility of parole. What these mothers did cannot be excused. The actions they took were callous and inherently selfish. Their children were innocents with no choice in their mother's distorted thinking and resulting actions. Their motives were complicated. The states of mind these women were in were tangled, convoluted, and unfathomable. Mothers who felt brutal cold murder of their children was their only option to relieve their inner pain or achieve the goals that they sought. These cases have a desperate sadness and define the meaning of tragedy. Six young adults had their lives taken, snatched from them in outbursts of unexpected violence. Their personalities, hopes, and dreams had formed, and the foundations of their future lives were already building. Their mothers were not abusive, uncaring, and neglectful in their younger childhood years. Yet the most significant danger to these children was not out there in the outside world, a place they'd been warned so much about. It was inside their home, inside their family unit. It was from their own mother. Stereo is the app for live social conversations. We want to talk directly with you, our listeners. You can join our show, ask questions about true crime, and share your experiences and opinions. We want to hear everything. Download now and join us live this week. Link to our show in the description.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.